European Football Weekly for May 19th, 2013. It is a final day edition of the show. I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, and Gord Brunt are alongside me. On the show, we will discuss Arsenal clinching Champions League for the 16th straight year. No Champions League for Tottenham, though. But what does that mean for Gareth Bale? The end of an era in the Barclays Premier League. Sir Alex, Paul Scholes, Michael Owen, Jamie Carragher, and even David Beckham are all set to retire from the game of footy. We'll discuss that and some more manager movement on the go around Europe as the dominoes seem to be falling for Jose Mourinho to make a return at Stamford Bridge. We'll also be joined by John Molinaro at 3:20 as we go more in depth on the season that was in the Barclays Premier League. We invite you to join us in the conversation here on European Football Weekly at EFWSN590 or Dan.Riccio at Sportsnet590.ca. What were the biggest stories of the Barclays Premier League season? Your surprises, your disappointments, even your best 11. We'll be happy to hear those as well at EFWSN590 on Twitter. Those are just some of the things we'll be discussing here today, along with the final day. It was the final day of the Barclays Premier League, and it wasn't the same as last year when Manchester City defeated Queen's Park Rangers in the 93rd minute to win the Barclays Premier League title. There wasn't that kind of drama, but there was still drama and lots of goals to be had in the Barclays Premier League today. And of course, all those games were on Sportsnet this morning. As I said, I'm Dan Riccio, Gord Brunt, Derek Brandeo around the table here on European Football Weekly. Gord, Arsenal, a 1-0 victory over Newcastle at St. James Park, the Sports Direct Arena, whatever they want to call it. I don't care if I get in trouble for that, not calling it the Sports Direct Arena. It's still St. James Park to hear to us here on European Football Weekly. But big win for Arsenal. They clinched Champions League qualification.
Yeah, they didn't make it easy, which has been the trend all year and the last few years, actually. They never make anything easy for themselves, but 16th straight season. I don't care what all the critics say at this point. I'm ecstatic as an Arsenal fan that they have qualified for the Champions League. Not only does that mean they're in the tournament, it also means that they can attract some new signings this summer. Being one of the few teams in Europe to make it to the Champions League, it does go a long way in luring transfers into your club, where Tottenham now might be dealing with the loss of Gareth Bale and not being able to lure the biggest names available in Europe.
Yeah, it could be a huge bonus for the North London club. And if you've listened to the show, we're usually a podcast, but with the Blue Jays being postponed today, we've been thrust into the fray here on Sportsnet 590.
We've been given the bump.
Yeah, we've been given the bump. But we've talked about Arsenal and how they have maybe the biggest transfer kitty. They have maybe the most money to spend this summer.
Yeah, the rumored £70 million from a sponsorship deal they signed, and you know, it all sounds nice, but there's always been the rumor of the available funds for Arsene Wenger, and he's just so prude with the money, and he's looking for the right people. So hopefully they open up the wallets a little bit this year. But
is this for real this year? That's our question. Is it for real? Is the transfer kitty for real this year, Derek?
I'm going to have to say I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, that's kind of the approach we have to take.
There's just so many players over the years that you've heard of. Oh, Arsenal had, you know, dibs at him, but yeah, another team outbid them. And it's never anything that's astronomical. It's always a couple million pounds or something. You know, they had a chance at Ronaldo. They had a chance in this guy. They had a chance at umpteen players. So I really need to see it to really believe it.
The last one for me that just made me stop believing any transfer rumor was the Eden Hazard. He's coming to Arsenal. Week later, he goes to Chelsea because they paid a couple $1 million more, or £1 million more. And I was like, give me a break.
It almost seems like, you know, if you want to get into English football, you announce yourself as an Arsenal target and then you just let the rest happen. All the other teams will be like, really? All right, then. Well, because I guess they just...
I swear Arsenal gives Chelsea ideas for transfer targets. They're interested in Hazard. Oh, he might fit with us. Boom, go and get him.
It almost seems that they're going to go after anybody that Arsenal goes after to weaken them. And not only that, they'll know they'll be able to outbid them.
It makes sense from a competitive standpoint. That's a great strategy, but
if you're owning the if you're owning Arsenal, what's an extra few million pounds? I mean, you said they spent an extra few million to get Eden Hazard. Chelsea did, but when you're already talking 30 million pounds, what's an extra couple?
I don't think it's just the owner. I think it's a matter of principle with Arsene Wenger, the manager. I feel like he doesn't like overpaying. He hates that aspect of the game. He's been outspoken about the astronomical transfer sums that have been paid over the years and how he doesn't want to get into that territory. But he almost has to if he wants to advance the club and progress and be one of the elite clubs in Europe.
Yes, because this is what we're talking about here. This is a big day for Arsenal fans. They're all so happy that they clinched Champions League as if it's a trophy when they haven't won an actual trophy for 8 years. But clinching Champions League was like winning the title for them today.
It is funny because this seems like the culmination of the year of despair that they've gone through. Because there seems to be a new problem every month, almost. You know, oh, we got this injury. Are we going to sign Theo Walcott? Well, I don't know. Are we going to be able to bring in new, you know, better players? Is it time for Arsene Wenger to leave? These things just seems to be a cycle with them.
Yeah, it's almost reminiscent of what's happened over the last two seasons, where they get out of the gates, they're struggling for the first couple months. There's questions of is Wenger past his due date? Do we need to bring in a new manager? But they start to slowly turn it on around Christmas, January, and even this year they went they earned 26 of a possible 30 points to finish the season, which is incredible.
Yeah,
I personally think the turnaround point was a 2-1 loss to Tottenham start of March, and that really clicked it on because they went out and beat Bayern Munich. It was a pointless win, but it was still huge for confidence, and they just steamrolled opponents right up until today.
And how much of this adventure in the Europa League that Tottenham did affected their run here in the last little few weeks?
Yeah, it seemed to really cause effect to Tottenham because there was some games in there where they just didn't seem to have the legs to get the results when it came to the end of the 90
minutes.
They
hit third place, and then they kind of just seemed to dip again. And maybe if they didn't focus or if they didn't put as many, much resources into the Europa League, then maybe we'd be looking at a team that got the extra 2 points that would have been needed to, qualify for Champions League.
It is European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio. That was the voice of Derek Grandeo. Gord Brunt is also here in the Sportsnet 590 The Fan studios. At EFWSN590 is where you can find us on Twitter. We're looking for your stories of the season in the Barclays Premier League. And we're also chatting right now about the final day that was in the Barclays Premier League. On to those Tottenham Hotspurs that we were just discussing. Gareth Bale scores an incredible goal for the... how many times has he done that this season? I'm not sure.
I don't know. On the oh my scale, it was at least five.
He's done it a little more than he's dived on the field and gotten a red or a yellow card.
Yeah, well, he's done that four times.
We used to joke about today. Like, we joked about how the second half was like Cisse time. Yeah. I think the last 15 minutes of a game have turned into Bale time.
Yeah, they really have gotten that identity of the old Manchester United clubs where they get the goals right at the death. You know, they wait till there's only minutes left and they finally get that goal.
They did it last week as well with Emmanuel Adebayor, but the goal essentially meant nothing because they still finished in fifth place. And my question for you guys is, was this a failed season for the Tottenham Hotspurs because their goal was to at least make Champions League? And despite the fact that they had 72 points this year in the Barclays Premier League, without Champions League qualification, it still feels like a failed season.
It does feel like a failed season, but one of the stats I saw shortly after the games was 72 points in the Premier League has been good enough to earn a Champions League spot in 13 previous seasons.
It's really bad luck because even last year they did finish fourth, which should get them Champions League qualification. Yeah. But since Chelsea won, they get that final Champions League spot and they also... means Tottenham didn't get a Champions League spot, even though Chelsea was in sixth last season.
Yeah, bottom line, you can look at it as a failure, but if you want to go through, if you want to look at it as a progression, consistency-wise, I would say they're right there now. You can't say that they're not on equal level with Arsenal or maybe even Chelsea, especially this year. And the way I think their results against the bigger clubs have been more telling than anything else. They've really announced themselves, beating
United earlier in the year.
Arsenal,
they beat Arsenal.
I think they beat City too, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can just see that the steps have been taken, and anybody who knows football and, you know, especially the players who are watching these teams and watching what they do, they know that Tottenham's a good side, and maybe one player is all they need to, you know, take him over that top to bring him into Champions League consistently, especially when you have a guy like Gareth Bale. There, you can't tell me there's nobody out there who's going to look and say, yeah, maybe I'm not going to get into Champions League this year, but I can play with this guy. And then who knows where that can take you? Because with a player like that, you always have that X factor to, you know, possibly even win it all. You know, Gareth Bale gets hot at the right time, a la Robert Lewandowski, scores 4 goals in a game, takes you across to the next level, next stage in, you know, the Champions League. So, you know, even though Arsenal might have made it this year, you could probably take a look at both teams and say, you know, in 2 years' time, does, you know, Tottenham have a better shot at winning the whole thing more than Arsenal? Because Arsenal, I think, needs to bring in some more players.
Yeah, they definitely do, and they most likely will this summer. Stefan Jovetic, there's lots of players rumored to be going to the Emirates this summer.
Not listening.
Yeah. but as for Tottenham, it will be about whether or not Gareth Bale is in or out at White Hart Lane, and it'll be up to the club to decide what is the right price for their Welsh superstar.
Yeah. That's going to be the deciding factor for me, whether this was a successful or a failure of a season. Because if they lose Bale, instantly a failure of a season, because you didn't get that Champions League spot that more than likely would have kept them at the club. And they really did miss out on, they, like you said, Derek, they beat a lot of the top teams, but they did miss out on a lot of opportunities to beat some of the lower teams, especially after that game against the Arsenal where they beat them 2-1. They went out and lost to Liverpool the following week. And then a week later, they lost to Fulham. That was a great opportunity for them to get a stranglehold of a Champions League position, and they blew it.
Yeah, you can say that that's where they lost their top four position. Yep.
Yeah, you could say that, but I can't say this is a choked season for Tottenham, because Arsenal were just so great down the stretch. And really, we all expected Chelsea to break down with all the matches that they had to play, and it didn't happen. Arsenal had a great season. After February 1st, they were the best team in the Barclays Premier League. The best team. Nobody had more points.
I always knew they were the best team, but
yeah, well,
that's a biased opinion.
Yes, it is. Let's talk about Sir Alex Ferguson's last match. He may not have finished the way he would have liked. 5-5 at the Hawthorns with West Bromwich Albion. Manchester United give up 2 3-goal leads in the game, once up 3-0, and then again they were up 5-2. Both leads squandered, but Sir Alex can say my final match may go down as one of the classics in the history of the English Premier League.
He gave the rest of the league, you know, what he'd given his fans for the last, you know, 26 years, pure excitement. And to go off on that note, at least for the neutral, must have been great. Because they've already won their title, so who cares what Manchester United fans think of that last game?
Yeah. Probably the greatest meaningless game played in the Barclays Premier League. A 5-5 draw in any sport, well, except for like basketball, is a great game.
Possible in basketball. But no, you can say whatever you want. The result didn't matter for Manchester United. And Fergie, I think more than anything, just wanted to go out and give a show for his last match manager.
It would have been great to see a last-second goal, though. Really go
in
out Fergie in true
time,
Fergie style.
Right?
Yeah.
In Fergie time.
What,
that would have been
would that
perfect.
Be, like the 97th minute, 98th?
Yeah, at least.
That's Fergie time, right?
That is Fergie time. The extra allotted injury time that shouldn't exist is Fergie time. European Football Weekly, I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, Gord Brunt. One last thing we want to get to before we break this segment. Chelsea, they clinched third place in the Barclays Premier League with a 2-1 victory. Automatic qualification into the Champions League group stages next year for Chelsea with that win. And also David Moyes' last match as Everton manager. I just said it. Chelsea, you can say whatever you want. They win the Europa League. Yeah, maybe that wasn't their goal at the start of the season, but still, with all the matches that they had to play, you still have to say this was a successful season for the Chelsea Blues.
No doubt, and I really do feel, I don't know this from experience, but I feel like the Chelsea fans are really starting to turn a leaf on Rafael Benitez. I even saw one tweet saying that there was a thank you Benitez sign at the game today. So bringing in trophies never hurts, and I do feel like he is the right man for the job, even though Jose Mourinho is the likely replacement after this season.
Yeah, whenever you win a trophy, you can't say that your season's been a complete bust. You know, if finishing the top four for Arsenal is a success, then winning a Europa League title has to be considered at least a minor success for Chelsea.
Yeah, it certainly does. And, well, it was the unthinkable for Rafa Benitez to actually win over the Chelsea fans, but he seems to have won over some with his managing this year. He had a lot to do, and to manage that squad it was a short squad, and with all the games they had to play, it was almost into the 70s in terms of games that they had to play this year, which is just dreadful for any football team to go through. It is European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, and Gord Brunt are around the table at EFWSN590s, where you can find us on Twitter. We're asking you for your stories of the year in the Barclays Premier League or anywhere around Europe. It is European Football Weekly. We like to cover all of the biggest leagues around Europe. We'll be talking to John Molinaro as we go more in-depth on the final day of the Barclays Premier League season right here on European Football Weekly, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. European Football Weekly, Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, Gord Brunt are around the table here in the Sportsnet 590 The Fan studios. It is a beautiful Sunday afternoon here on the May 2 for a long weekend, and we're diving into the final day of the Barclays Premier League season. Arsenal clinch the final Champions League position in the Barclays Premier League. Manchester United go out with a bang, although they didn't win, but a 10-goal thriller at the Hawthorns with West Brom. And now, joining us to discuss it a little bit more here on European Football Weekly is John Molinaro of Sportsnet.ca. Thanks for doing this, John.
Oh, my pleasure.
John, we want to dive in right with Arsenal. We've been discussing it in the first segment. We know you're an Arsenal fan, and, well, how big was this turnaround for Arsenal? We talked about it in the first segment. After February the 1st, they've been the best team in the Barclays Premier League. Just how have they turned it around on the Spurs to get that final Champions League spot?
I think, you know, the thing that, you know, that's really been the difference is that they just sort of learned how to grind out results, you know, too often. And I'll admit this as an Arsenal supporter. I think they're far too interested in winning pretty and trying to walk the ball in the net and not necessarily, you know, trying to win, win ugly or do whatever it takes to win. They really had to find that that drive and that gear, you know, in terms of just grinding out results and not necessarily, you know, having to win pretty all the time. And I think that was the case today. I mean, Newcastle played them pretty close, and it's not like Arsenal blew them out of the park or, you know, did anything spectacular. They just, you know, kind of grinded out a result and did what they had to do. And I think that's pretty much what they've done since February, is just kind of quietly go about their business and find a way to win. And in the end, I think that was the difference. And probably helped them too that you know, that early Champions League exit and Spurs going a little bit longer in the Europa League,
right?
You know, that meant extra fixtures for them, so I'm sure that had a part to play in it. But I really do think it was just a matter of Arsenal putting their nose to the grindstone, you'll pardon the cliche, and just, you know, grinding out results.
Yeah, and I really wonder how much of this has to do with Arsene Wenger changing his mindset as the season went on. Through the midseason, it was all about, okay, maybe Arsene Wenger's done here with Arsenal. And he really turned the tides after that 2-1 loss to the Tottenham Hotspurs in the North London Derby. And he sat his captain, Thomas Vermaelen, and it seems like that was the turning point in the season.
Yeah, I think a lot of what sort of drove the late comeback from February, too, was just, you know, all the questions about Arsene Wenger's future, and, you know, is the streak going to finally come to an end where he doesn't get them into the Champions League? And, you know, not that I necessarily think it would have cost him his job if they didn't finish fourth, but it certainly would have put heat on, you know, him and the Arsenal board if he didn't get them into the Champions League. So, you know, I suspect that that had something to do with it as well. And, you know, you can't really fault them, because since February, as you said, they've been, you know, one of the better teams in the Premier League.
John Molinaro of Sportsnet.ca is joining us here on European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, Gord Brunt are around the table.
John, it does seem like they have experienced the most success with Koscielny and Mertesacker playing center back for them with Vermaelen on the bench. Do you think this is sustainable? Do you think they might add to the defense, or do you think they'll be happy with these two going forward?
No, I don't think, I mean, it's just me personally, I don't think they can be happy with just this going forward. I think to a large extent, Koscielny and Mertesacker are overachieved, and they really need to bring in either Vermaelen back into the fold, into the starting 11, and I would suggest bring in another center back, just add depth mm-hmm. to that position, because I'm not entirely convinced by that pairing. I know they kind of got the job done down the stretch, but, you know, for me, they just lack quality, genuine quality compared to other sort of center backs in the league. So I think it's a position that Arsenal would be well advised to strengthen in the offseason.
Hey, John, with the problems that they had with their goaltender, Koscielny, earlier, or Chesney, sorry, and this being such a young team and Arsene Wenger always sticking up for them, you know, a lot of people would say blindly. Do you think maybe this team's finally starting to show some maturity with especially the way you said that they've been grinding out those victories, and maybe they've finally taken some of the responsibility to themselves?
I think there's some truth in that. Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, one of the big problems for Arsenal is that they never quite replaced a guy like Patrick Vieira, who, you know, aside from what he brought onto the field, I mean, he was, he was the general of that team, right? I mean, there was no question that he was the captain, that he was the go-to guy, that he was, you know, sort of the fulcrum of the team from a leadership position. And I'm not sure they've ever really replaced him. And I don't really see anyone in the current squad who has that sort of same leadership mentality and capabilities that Vieira did. They've got some wonderful players, don't get me wrong. I think Santi Cazorla is someone who doesn't quite get the recognition or credit he deserves, because I thought he had a fabulous season. And guys like Podolski and Giroud, although a slow start to the campaign, I thought they really came on. But I think they really need that sort of type of player, like a Vieira or a Yaya Toure. Someone
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Someone in that mold who can really sort of offer this team some bona fide leadership.
Yeah, and I think we all agree with you here on European Football Weekly. They really miss a guy who can really connect the defense with the attack. But moving on here, John, Tottenham. Is this a failed season for Tottenham, not making Champions League, even though they had a great season with 72 points?
It's cruel. You know, it's interesting. It's kind of cruel to say it's a failed season because, you know, they did pretty well in Europa League. And, you know, they finished fifth and just barely finished out of the top four. I think they had, if not the same amount of points that they had last year, then just slightly above, or maybe it's just under. I can't quite recall. So, I mean, on the face of it, you know, I think it was a pretty successful season, but I think clearly they had ambitions for a top four finish and getting into the Champions League. And, you know, it seems unfair to judge them solely on that, but that's modern football, right?
Right, yeah.
And I think, you know, by that standard, you know, they're going to have to consider it as a failed season because they're not going to be competing in the Champions League next year. And that might be the one thing that results in them not being able to keep Gareth Bale.
Some say that the Europa League may have hurt Tottenham. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think it really had that much of an effect on their play down the stretch?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've never really bought that kind of argument about, teams are kind of distracted and they have to, field two different teams when they're competing in simultaneous right. competitions. If you're good enough, then you should be good enough to compete in two fronts. And let's be honest, it's not like we're talking about Stoke or Norwich City here. We're talking about Tottenham. They've got some depth and some quality and some skill there. Surely they should have been able to compete on the two fronts. Maybe it sort of, you know, hurt them a little bit, but, you know, if they're using that as the excuse as to why they finished outside the top four, then I think it's just that. It's an excuse.
It is European Football Weekly at EFWSN590 is where you can find us on Twitter. We're joined by John Molinaro of Sportsnet.ca right now. There's one question that needs to be asked. You kind of alluded to it. Does Gareth Bale stay at White Hart Lane, John?
I wouldn't think so. You know, he's a player who, not that he had a necessarily breakout season this year, because we all knew he was a great player before this, but this was, you know, a fantastic campaign.
Unbelievable.
This really was. I mean, they're talking about not that he's on the same level of Messi or Ronaldo, but he's, you know,
he's getting there. Yeah.
He's getting there.
He's in the next tier.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a player of his skill and ability, you know, deserves to play in the, on the largest club scale stage in the world. And he's not going to get a chance to do that with Spurs. And no doubt that, you know, after the year he had, that the suitors are going to be lining up and they're going to be shelling out big dollars to get him. So if I'm Spurs, I'm seriously thinking I'm going to cash in on him now when he's at an all-time high and, you know, use the money to reinforce the team. Because if they wait a year, you never know. I mean, he could have
he could break down.
Serious injury or something like that, and then what happens? So unless you can get him to, you know, recommit to a long-term deal, then I think you sell him off and you cash him in while his market value is at the absolute highest value.
Do you think there's possibly any chance that even if they, you know, go out and spend some money and bring in some players, because they are close, they're very close to being in that Champions League spot. I mean, I think we all know that. Mm-hmm. And if they, if you know, they show the investment because of, I guess, his success this year with AVB and maybe moving forward, is there a chance? Because I don't see him going to any other EPL team, unless it's maybe Manchester City, who's going to just outspend everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's the chance that he might stay there? Because from what I've been hearing, it seems that it's Real Madrid or probably nowhere else. And with the economic problems in Spain, it might be a tough sell for them to even go after Gareth Bale right now.
Yeah, I mean, that hasn't stopped Real Madrid before, though.
No, that's true.
So, I mean, if they want him, they're going to get him. I mean, if they'll get another favorable bank loan for, like, they always
they always do, yeah.
And they'll figure it out. You raise an interesting point. I mean, if Spurs kind of show serious commitment this season and, you know, bring in some key players to sort of strengthen the squad and make them a Champions League contender, and if Bale sees that, then maybe he sticks around another year. That's very possible. But if it's just a matter of, you know, we like what we have, we're only going to tinker a bit, I can't see Bale sticking around. I really think he's, you know, he wants to play Champions League football, and he should. And if someone else can offer him that, then I think it behooves Spurs to not only give him that, but as I said, to cash in while they can.
John, we're going to be talking about our biggest stories of the Barclays Premier League season in the next segment. What's your biggest story of the year?
In the EPL? Oh, geez, God, there were so many. you know, I think of, you know, one of the early ones was Roberto Di Matteo getting fired, because I think, you know, not too many of us saw that coming.
Yeah.
You know, that was certainly a shocker. And then there's stuff like, you know, Michu, who, you know, didn't come out of nowhere, because I think people who, you know, follow world football closely enough knew what he was doing at Rayo Vallecano last season. But, you know, he certainly took the EPL by storm, though, in that first half of the season. I think that was a, you know, a pretty big story. And then, you know, RVP making the switch to Manchester United from Arsenal, that was pretty big. I think, you know, this biting thing with Luis Suarez, unfortunately, was, you know, something that got a lot of attention. But if I'm only going to pick one, and it seems like an obvious one, but, you know, I have to think it's probably the retirement of Sir Alex Ferguson. I mean,
yeah,
to walk away from the game, we all knew it was going to happen at some point. I mean, obviously, he's not going to go on forever, but I honestly thought he had another, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 or even 5 more years in him.
It seemed like he was going for that Champions League run.
Yeah, I really thought that, like, that was going to be it, Dan. I thought, you know, okay, he didn't get to the Champions League final this year, and how great would have been if he could have won it at Wembley. So I thought he's going to try at least another 2 years, and if in the first year he wins the Champions League, then that's it. You know, that'll be, he's got 3 cups, European cups, he's going to walk away. Not that, you know, walk away now, it diminishes his reputation anything less. I mean, and God knows he's earned the rest, and I'm sure his wife is you know, thrilled to have him home. I was just a little surprised, because I really thought he wanted to go out on the best possible note. Not that he isn't walking out on his own terms and he wasn't a fabulous manager, he is. I just really thought that it would take another sort of European Cup for him to walk away. So I was a bit surprised by that. And for me, that was the biggest story of the year.
Yeah, it certainly was one of the biggest, as you said. It wasn't shocking, but it was, because it just didn't seem like the right time for Sir Alex to go out just now. John Molinaro of Sportsnet.ca, thank you for joining us here on European Football Weekly.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, John.
So, in the last segment, I think we'll go through our biggest stories of the Barclays Premier League season. Sean Hogan has written into us here on Twitter at EFWSN590. Let's hear it for West Bromwich Albion. Nice eighth spot finish. Steve Clark, as the boss, has worked nicely. Can you see WBA repeat? Hashtag baggies.
I could, but they need the depth to sustain that because they had a great first half of the season and they just fizzled out near the end. They
all about Roman Lukaku.
Yeah, and they will not have Mr. Lukaku next year. At least it doesn't seem like they will. I can't see Chelsea giving him up for yet another year on loan. And let's be honest, West Bromwich Albion don't have the funds to buy Romelu Lukaku at this point. But a hat trick for him today and a great finish for West Bromwich Albion, just one of the many great stories in the Barclays Premier League this season. I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, Gord Brunt, around the table with me here on European Football Weekly. We will go over our biggest stories of the Barclays Premier League season, as well as some of the news and notes around Europe. Next, right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. About some love for the baggies, huh? West Bromwich Albion, Sean Hogan. Talking about that last tweet that I read out in the last segment, but wasn't expecting love from the baggies when people started tweeting into the show, eh, Gord?
Yeah. It's one of the, I don't want to say the last team, but definitely it's outside the box, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely not what we expected here on European Football Weekly, but we're inviting you to join in. Sean Hogan, his biggest story of the year was West Bromwich Albion. A nice eighth place finish. Top 10 for the Baggies this year. Not expected at all for them, but just one of the many great stories in the Barclays Premier League this season. Tweet us at EFWSN590. Email us dan.riccio at sportsnet590.ca. As I said, European Football Weekly, Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, Gord Brunt around the table. Teased you a little bit. We're going to be giving you our biggest stories of the Barclays Premier League seasons right now. Gord, I hate to do this to you, put you on the spot. Actually, we've been teasing it for like 40 minutes now, so it's not really on the spot.
Had some time to prepare.
But yeah, biggest story of the Barclays Premier League season for you, Gord. Can't say Arsenal either.
Well, I'm going to go outside the box and break the rules here and say that the biggest negative story, Luis Suarez.
Definitely.
Has got to be the biting gate.
The bite. Biting Branislav Ivanovic was not pretty for anybody.
I was going to pick Alex Ferguson, but Mr. Molinaro.
Straight on him. Right out of you.
Yeah, that's a great one to have. I've got to go Swansea winning the Capital One Cup.
Wow.
And getting a spot in Europe for next season.
Look at that.
Completely turning it off in the EPL as the season dwindled down because they didn't care anymore. They were sitting comfortably, and I believe it's like eighth spot right now. They've got a spot in Europe.
The Baggies are in eighth. Don't forget.
Oh, ninth spot.
The Baggies.
What, ninth? Sorry.
But yes, Swansea. I didn't even think about that. Another great
story.
Just
their season overall. They had a solid year. Michu, as John Molinaro mentioned as well. Just overall, great season for the Welsh team, who will be joined by another Welsh team next year in Cardiff.
Yes, Cardiff City. Joining Swansea as another Welsh team in the Barclays Premier League next season. Derek, on to you for your biggest story of the BPL season.
Oh, biggest story of the BPL season? Jeez. You kind of want to go with the Sir Alex Fergus thing because it was so shocking. Because
it's taken.
I know. Because, you know.
You can just further John's point if you
want. Well, I would like to further the fact that, you know, it had seemed that, you know, the rumors had dissipated because there was a good 2-year run where, you know, is this the year he's going to do it?
I stopped thinking that.
And we all did collectively and we just put it to bed and, you know, then, you know, out comes Fergie with you think you knew, but no, you really didn't know. And that's to me has to be, I'm going to have to go with John on this one. That's still the biggest story for me. 26 years. It's a legacy.
It is a legacy and longer than, you know, my tenure in life. So,
which is not a legacy.
No, but it's not. But 38 trophies in 26 years. I think overall he's accounted for more than 60% of Manchester United's trophies as a whole.
I would have assumed it was even higher than that.
Yeah,
to be honest,
exactly.
Because, you know, other than the team of the 60s, they really went through a bit of a rough patch there, especially in the 80s. So Yeah, it has to be. I mean, even with Bitegate and, you know...
It is the biggest story of the season.
Luis Suarez comes in at a deplorable second, though, I would say.
How he could be so great and so awful at the same time. Yeah, I think so.
All I could think of was that bite was just like, you know, all of those CSI, or not CSI, all of those Criminal Minds or even CSI episodes you're thinking is like, you know, we can match those dental marks to his, you know, to his teeth. But just deplorable from Luis Suarez. And it's a good thing that we've kind of forgotten about him for the last couple of weeks, because it just seems that every time you had something good to say about him, two things negative were just around the corner.
And we may not see him in the Barclays Premier League next season at all. That'll be one of the biggest transfer sagas of the summer, as we wonder if Luis Suarez will leave Anfield. He will leave Liverpool. It's going to be one of the great stories of the summer to watch in the Barclays Premier League. But for me, I got to say, it has to be Laddick magic. I know they didn't do the Houdini. No Houdini for Laddick this year. Wigan Athletic, they're going down to the championship, relegated. But as a plus for them, in the Europa League next year, and also for one season, they can say we're the FA Cup champions. Somewhat, they can say we're the champions of England, in a sense.
Yeah. I'm going to make a bold prediction and say that they won't be in the Europa League very long.
Because well, Birmingham City made it to... Well, they were knocked out in the group stage. So
it's just that
when they did it in 2011,
we might not pay a lot of attention to the championship, but it is a grind. 46 games is ridiculously long season.
Europa League on top of that,
yeah, exactly. And not only that, you know that they're going to start in August probably with Europa League. So
yeah,
it's one of those tournaments where I don't think Wigan will be putting out their top roster because they'll be wanting to get back in the Premier League ASAP. And I really do feel like it'll be one season down in the championship and back in the Premier League next year.
Yeah, and for a small club like Wigan, you have to wonder how their travel plans will work out. What are they going to do if they have to travel to Rubin Kazan or Moscow or, you know, are we going to take the bus to Russia?
Scrounge up the pennies.
Oh, it's going to be an interesting story. But Laddick, they really won my heart as the season went on.
Yeah.
They were just such a great story.
They were my team in the second half outside of Arsenal. In the first half, it was West Brom. I was a big West Brom supporter before Christmas time, before they started to fizzle out. So
they held the top four position for a little bit, like through November, I think it was. So,
yeah, I don't think anyone was really buying it, but no, they were up there for way longer than was.
There was a point
expected.
Where I was about to start buying it, like, oh, Shane Long, he's looking good, and Lukaku, wow, what a physical specimen.
Player of the year.
Think this team can maybe stay up. No.
And that was all without Peter Odemwingie really doing anything.
Yeah, exactly.
But sorry, just to go back to Wigan for a second. They're just one of those teams that you can't dislike them because Dave Whelan is such a great owner.
Yeah.
Roberto R. Martinez is so well spoken and, you know, he's just a great gentleman of the game. So it's a shame to see that them go down just because I think their owner, Dave Whelan's just a phenomenal story, especially with what he's done for them and the trust that he's been given, you know, Roberto Martinez. We talk about, you know, there's no longevity in management these days. And, you know, he really did stick out with Roberto and it, you know, unfortunately he went down, but it did pay off for the last two years at least.
Yeah. Whelan's he's sort of a throwback in that sense. He's like the old football manager who actually has, reliability in his coaches. So
played the game too. So
yeah, played the game.
And what Roberto Martinez has had to do with such a small budget at West Brom, it was only a matter of time before, or sorry, not West Brom, Wigan. And it was only a matter of time before the Laddick did go down. 8 years, and it was a wonderful 8 years, and some of the Houdini tricks they had to pull at the end of the season to get out of the relegation zone impressive. And Laddick magic, as we've coined it, hashtag Laddick magic.
Yeah, I just thought it was this unfortunate timing of the FA Cup, just 3 days before they had to play Arsenal in a do-or-die match. Just, of course, it's nice to win the FA Cup, but they would have, you know, really liked to have stayed in the Premier League a little more, I thought.
Yeah, because that £30 million just
They got a nice parachute payment, and I'm not sure exactly how much it is, but they get a lofty sum. Definitely will help them to come back right back up.
Yeah, we hope so, because it's been a lot of fun watching Wigan Athletic over the years, and I never thought I'd say that, but... here I am saying it right here on European Football Weekly. Dan Riccio, Gord Brunt, Derek Brandeo around the table here. And now let's move on. There's a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of stuff going on around Europe. Carlo Ancelotti, today, he informed PSG, Paris Saint-Germain, the team he manages, that he wants to leave the club. Despite winning Ligue 1 this year in France, PSG is not for him, I guess. He wants to move on to Real Madrid, bigger and better things with the Galacticos. And apparently they want him, so...
It definitely seems that it's moving towards that with every new announcement made. You know, it seems to be that's the inevitable. Mourinho was kind of making noise that he was going to stay, but that seems to be almost an impossibility right now. The way that the squad has completely mutinied, you can almost even say that. Maybe not a full mutiny, but there's definitely signs of that happening over there.
Led by Casillas?
I'm not going to say who's leading anything. Yeah. Let's just say that the players have definitely are in disagreement with the manager. You know, he hasn't had the smoothest of transitions to Real Madrid. A lot of it is his own doing, I would say. You know, he maybe didn't understand how he should have approached, you know, managing Real Madrid. Although I can't, how can you really, you know, say anybody should know how to, you know, approach managing Real Madrid, because, you know, if you just look at the great Del Bosque, they fired him after winning a Champions League. So you can't blame it all on Mourinho. You could probably go a 70-30, but there's definitely institutional things that need to change at Real Madrid.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. And whether or not Carlo Ancelotti will coach Real Madrid next season.
He is a yes man, and he is used to dealing with Berlusconi and stuff like that. So maybe he's a bit better suited for this. But, you know, if you don't get results, then that's
you're out pretty quickly at the Bernabeu.
Even if you do get results, you seem to be on your way out.
Yeah.
It just seems to be that there's no 3 years seems to be the maximum that anybody can, you know, do anything there, because you just, like you said.
And do not play defensive football, because you will not last, even if you're winning playing defensive football.
Honestly, I don't think Mourinho got, there was maybe some flack at the beginning, but how can you say he played defensive football when, you know, especially when you look at last year's team, you know, they smashed the goals record, they smashed the points record. So that's kind of a misnomer for me. It
seemed like everybody had 30 goals on Real Madrid last year. At least.
Exactly.
Not everybody.
Between the three strikers.
Ronaldo, Higuain, and Benzema.
They had over 100 goals themselves. It's ridiculous. And, you know, even if it was mostly from counterattacking, you score goals, you can't be called a defensive team.
Yeah, and it was quite funny watching Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey final as Jose Mourinho was red carded from the touchline.
Not just him, Ronaldo as well. There was a lot of hatching going on by Atletico. It was definitely the game plan by Atletico Madrid to, you know, take liberties as much as they could, and the referee let it go, and eventually, you know, CR7 lost his cool. And probably it was a little unjustified to get sent off, but, you know, you can't even make a motion to, like, you know, look like you're going after a guy like that.
Walter Mazzarri of Napoli, current manager of Napoli, has said he will be leaving the San Paolo this summer, even though they finished second and look to be on the up and up, but he doesn't want to stick around, and it's leading to a lot of rumors that maybe he knows something that the world doesn't. Maybe he knows Edinson Cavani will be leaving Napoli as well this summer, and he knows I can't win without Cavani, so see ya!
Yeah, this is another one of those tired transfer rumors. Just wait till the season's over and then announce that he's leaving. It's all year you've heard Edinson Cavani's leaving. No, he's staying now. No, he's leaving.
No, he's leaving. Yeah, he's staying.
Good God.
But 60 million euros is the transfer fee wanted. So very few clubs can have him if they want him that badly.
60 million? That leaves Arsenal with 10 million left over. It should be okay, right?
Right, of course, Gord. Keep up.
What happens if Chelsea pays 61?
Well, we're screwed.
That'll be the day. And before we leave here, kind of the end of an era in England a little bit. Sir Alex, we talked about him retiring. Paul Scholes also had his last match today. Jamie Carragher had his last match with Liverpool. Michael Owen was in his last match as well today. And as we know, David Beckham retired as well this week, but he's still got another game or two to play in Ligue 1 in France. Guys, the end of an era. Anything?
Yeah, a couple of these guys maybe should have retired a few seasons ago. Michael Owen and David Beckham. But yeah, it is.
I would have gone with Carragher myself.
Really? I thought he's been solid.
Solid once a month does not equal a good football player to me anymore.
We can't take Derek's opinion on Jamie Carragher at
no bias here on that.
Yeah,
one.
Mr. Toffee fan talking about a Liverpool guy, but some great stuff out of those guys. Parting shots on David Beckham. Anything you guys wish to talk about? What is his legacy that he leaves behind?
Obviously a commercial magnet that probably was, you know, given a bigger name for his looks and possibly, you know, his advertisement prowess than maybe his footballing. Even though he's a phenomenal footballer, he's proven it over and over again. Every time you kind of threw him under the bus, he just came back and, you know, with a good performance and showed you that he was a good professional footballer.
He was just never among the most elite in the world.
His problem was that he had the hype machine of the English media behind him, and he was a good footballer, you know, finished second in the Footballer of the Year voting once, you know, probably the best dead ball situation kicker that we've seen.
Yeah.
At delivering, especially a pass, not just scoring goals from those situations, maybe a little unfairly just. I like to claim him as the most overrated and underrated player of all time.
Yeah. Gord?
Other than his country, he's just a winner. He's won with Real Madrid, Manchester United, the Galaxy, PSG. I don't think he was there for the AC Milan title a couple seasons ago, but he contributed, so he's won it all, basically.
Yeah, and I agree. I kind of agree with Derek. He's really overhyped by the English media, and the casual soccer fan thinks he's this great, great, great thing, but to normal football fans, we maybe put him down more than we should, and he was just a good, good footballer, right, more than anything else. And you can't blame him for that. You can't really blame him entirely for all the attention that he got either. He was a good-looking lad. Anyways.
Your words.
European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio. That'll do it for us here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can normally catch the show on sportsnet590.ca or on iTunes. Just search European Football Weekly. Also want to remind you, May 25th, postseason. Or not postseason, Champions League post-game final, sportsnet590.ca. You can catch us there wrapping up the Champions League final that will be on Sportsnet between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. Until then, enjoy watching the rest of the football this year. There's not much left. We'll talk to you next week.